I heard so. If you wish for it to be recorded, please raise your hand to be recognized. And when it comes time to vote, if we have anything that we do need to vote on that's not by unanimous consent, please use the green check mark for yes, the red X for no, and the gray slow down for abstain. And with that said, like I said, we're going to give it a couple minutes for folks to join. Looks like we've got quite a few that are coming in, which is amazing. I also apologize if you hear me crunching. I was just finishing up a bite of yogurt, and it's the Almond Coco Loco. Just a little bit of crunch going on. All right.
Why did this just freeze? Oh, they're back.
Okay, as we are still admitting individuals, I am going to go ahead and call this meeting to order on Wednesday, February 18th at 2:02 p.m. Yvonne, if you can go ahead with roll call, please.
Everyone, welcome. If you hear your name, if you can please acknowledge that you're here, I would greatly appreciate it. And if I don't name you or calling you, please let me know as well. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Mel Bonta.
Present.
Marcy Benda.
Present.
Jennifer Best.
Present.
Adam Blakesley. Michael Boggs.
Present.
Gladys Brangman.
Here.
Sean Chang.
Present.
Carl Cornell.
Present.
Erica Crawley.
I'm here.
Thank you. Bethany Dixon.
Present.
Jamie Doss.
Present.
Alicia Erickson.
Present.
Howard Rose.
Here.
Kyle Carnuda.
I'm here.
Ellie Crump Powers.
I'm here.
Jeremy Cruiser. Sophie Lanchas.
Present.
Locane Yelverton. Tia Menders. Anne Morse.
Present.
Stephanie Rasu.
Present.
Matthew Schneider.
Present.
Michelle Stefanski Seymour.
Present.
Kate Supran.
I'm here.
Thank you. Jeff Serene.
Present.
Wendy Treat.
Here.
Danielle Weirson.
Present.
Nikki Williams. All righty, thank you. I believe that is everyone. Back to you, Wendy.
And I believe we have quorum also. I see Yelverton is also joining, if you can mark him as in attendance, Yvonne. All right, so off to the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayakono disposition and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Next on our agenda is the approval of the February 4th meeting minutes. The link to the minutes was in the agenda, if you all could take a second to review, and then I would welcome any motions to either amend or a motion to approve by unanimous consent. No one has any amendments. I would welcome a motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Move
motion
to approve,
approve
by unanimous consent.
Do I have a second?
Seconded.
All right. Do I have any dissent? Seeing no dissent, our minutes. What was that? Seeing no dissent, our minutes from February 4th meeting are approved. Moving to our next item on the agenda, a call for late additions to the agenda. I actually have one myself. I need to add an incidental or announcement of an incidental vacancy. I would like to add that after the future of the American University Committee information under business of the day. And I would welcome a motion to approve an addition to the agenda by unanimous consent.
So motioned.
Seconded?
Seconded.
Any dissent? Seeing none, we will add that to our business of the day. Do we have any other late additions to the agenda? All right, seeing none, we will move into our business of the day. We are happy to have Christy Mahoney, who is the Assistant Dean for Centers and Institutes in the College of Human Ecology, and Michelle Arteby, who is the Director of Workforce Wellbeing, join us to discuss the Cornell Employee Emergency Care Fund. My apologies, Christy. You should be all set to screen share if you'd like.
Thank you, Wendy. Welcome, everyone. Or welcome me. Hi, everyone. I think Michelle is going to screen share first. Thanks, Michelle.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thanks for welcoming me, inviting us, and welcoming us back. Again, Michelle Arteby, oversee workforce well-being in the Division of HR. So we're here today to talk to you a little bit about the Emergency Care Fund, which stands for Cornellians Aiding and Responding to Employees. And just kind of, I'm going to speak to kind of a high level overview of the program, how it gets run, and then Christy will be, as our steadfast champion of leading fundraising and development efforts on campus, kind of talking about our goals there and kind of where we're at financially. The CARE Fund provides grants to Cornell employees who have directly themselves experienced a non-recurring, sudden, or emergency financial hardship due to an unavoidable event. So it's a mouthful, isn't it? There are a lot of different situations in which somebody might need financial assistance, obviously. So we try to be really clear with our language about the types of things that kind of fall under the purpose of the fund. And I'll give some examples for that in a moment. Shout out, though, to the Employee Assembly, because the EA created the Emergency Care Fund in 2001 and moved under HR leadership partnership with the EA in around 2009, 2010, I believe. It is funded entirely by donations from staff, faculty, and other supporters. We've received donations from retirees, community members on the rare occasion, but predominantly, as you'll hear from Christy, staff are our biggest donors. As of 2022, when we went through a very in-depth review of the program, the maximum award amount was actually increased to $2,000. Who can apply to the fund is Cornell employees who hold a benefits eligible full or part-time position. So there's more information about eligibility at the website. We are happy to share these slides with you so you can include them in the minutes, Wendy, and you'll be able to click on the links here. So qualifying events include natural disasters. We have supported employees who have experienced hurricanes in areas like St. Petersburg and North Carolina, in areas where we have remote working employees through the fund. Residential fires, floods, people who are dislocated due to an unhealthy or an unsafe living environment that isn't being rectified by landlords or owners. One-time medical emergencies or personal injury expenses that are not covered by insurance, domestic violence or family crisis situations, homelessness due to unforeseen circumstances, loss of income when a financially contributing household member passes away or becomes disabled. In terms of non-qualifying events, a loss of employment, unless it's the result of a sudden disability or death of a family member, ongoing or increased cost to household bills, which unfortunately is something that folks are grappling with. Auto repairs is one of our most commonly denied applications, particularly if it's simply the auto repairs. Sometimes there are situations like a very tragic car accident or other things that can result to transportation repairs needed that may qualify under other aspects of the program. Unfortunately, we're unable to support veterinary expenses. However, there is a fund named after Mary Opperman, our former VP of HR, at the Veterinary Patients Assistance Fund through the College of Veterinary Medicine. Bills related to ongoing health conditions, and essentially a situation that is not directly threatening the faculty or staff members' ability to meet their basic living expenses. And by basic expenses, we're talking having a roof over your head, food, basics like heat. Okay. And unfortunately, I mean, we all know there are so many different financial impacts or situations that people can find themselves in that don't necessarily meet the purpose of the program. And one of my fears is always that it suggests to people that they're not in a true crisis or that they should have completely seen it coming or it's their fault in some way. That's never the intention of the program. We have very limited funding, more needs than we have available funding. And so we really strive to make sure funding is available when we have somebody who literally has had their home burned down, which we just had a few days ago. So it's really important that we're reserving the funding for those circumstances. Oops. For oversight of the fund, as I mentioned, HR oversees it, including the accounting. We have two volunteer committees, though, and without these committees, this program would not run. We've got fundraising and development, which Christy has been leading for many years now. And anyone can volunteer to be on this committee. We actually have an outline of the role on Workday under the gig section. So I included a link to that if you're interested in checking that out. And that's where we've found many of our committee members actually who go browsing around looking for opportunities to give back, learn something new, join a committee. We also have an application review committee, and this is staffed by representatives from human resources, labor relations, the Department of Inclusion and Belonging, and a few other groups. That is not just an open throw your, say you want to volunteer and you're automatically on it. Obviously, there's a lot of sensitivity around, reviewing applications incredibly thoughtfully. If it's something that you're interested in, I'd be very happy to have one-on-one conversations with folks and kind of determine whether that might be a good fit. The application process, just for your own awareness, is an employee completes an online application. There are very few circumstances, however, they do exist where somebody is struggling considerably with completing an online application. Somebody I was very recently helping was having all kinds of IT issues, and rather than making a stressful situation all the more worse, we were able to have somebody apply on their behalf. So a manager can apply on their behalf. If they fill out a paper form, I can enter it to the system as well. So know that even though it says it's an online application, we are able to work with folks. The application review committee chairperson removes all identifying information from applications that come in and sends the application on to the committee to review. And the removal of that information is an important part of protecting people's privacy, as well as preventing bias from coming into play when reviewing applications. The committee then discusses it, asks for clarification on the situation, because sometimes folks are very detailed in their situations, and other times they offer very little, and more information is needed in order to determine how it fits against the criteria of the program. And then the committee makes a decision around approving or denying the application. The chairperson then communicates that decision to the applicant. We do ask folks in the application process if they would like to be contacted by somebody from the Faculty and Staff Assistance Program about what they're navigating, and sometimes they check yes to that, so we make a referral there as well. Recipients do receive their award post-tax via the next available payroll. Okay, so in the vast majority of situations, that works okay. There are rare circumstances where we can cut an off-cycle payment. Fortunately, that the need for that has been pretty minimal. So that's just a little bit about the application process. And now I'm going to actually turn it over to Christy to talk a little bit more about the numbers here. And then I'm going to also be paying attention to chat if folks have questions.
Thank
Go
you,
ahead, Christy.
Michelle. So, as Michelle mentioned, thanks to the Employee Assembly, the fund was initiated in 2010. So we have no. We have data from 2010 when it transitioned to HR. The fund was developed by Employee Assembly much before that, but we don't have data from then. So from 2010 to 2025, which is the last full year that we have data, over 400 employees, 405 employees across the institution have received over $500,000, $520,000 in help from the fund. Sounds like a lot. It's exciting, and I feel it makes my heart warm, and I feel good about that. Now I'm going to show you the reality of actually the level of engagement. Each year, the total number of applications outpaces, as Michelle says, not only the total donations, but the total need. And so we have scripted very carefully the qualifying events. This results in a very critically unmet need for emergency support in our community. And that's the sad part. We have spent time analyzing the data that we have. Currently, only 3% of the workforce at Cornell contributes at any level to the fund. That could be a dollar a pay, it could be a one-time donation. That's 3%. 345 employees right now participate in contributing to the fund. That breakdown is about 1.3% the faculty, tenure track, and RTE, and 3.5% staff and union. The engagement level in 2025 is the lowest we've seen since pre-pandemic. We in the development committee have set these kind of lofty goals. At one point, we were hoping we would get 100% of faculty engagement. Seeing that only 1% of the faculty engage, we've kind of ratcheted our hopes and aspirations down to just 50% of all faculty. And seeing that 3% of our staff and union members are engaged in contributions to the fund, we say, what about could we increase that to 30%? If we were to achieve those goals, that would be 1,467 faculty that would participate and 2,226 staff. It's quite a bit of quite a change, but when you think about the number of employees that we have, it's not that big of a breach. Yes, there was a presentation to the Faculty Senate last week. Thank you for the question. How can you help us? Sorry, I see an error on this slide. How can the EA help us achieve our goal? So there's two key ways. One is if you don't already donate, consider a donation to the fund. And then help us spread the word, both of awareness and of the availability of the fund to help colleagues and the opportunity to give and donate. There are many ways you can, as you see there, for engagement. I would say the third thing that you could do is if you're interested in volunteering, reach out to me. You can become a part of our ambassadors group. Conducting presentations like this is a great way to help raise the awareness, as is tabling at many of the campus events. We have developed in the past year a tiered giving tiers approach for our campaign. Depending on the level of your contribution, you receive perks and benefits associated with whether it's credit at the Cornell store, the badges as you see there, a letter from either the committee or the VP of HR in gratitude. And we are open for questions.
And the very first thing that I should have said was thank you to those of you in this group who are regular contributors to this program. I'm quite confident, at least a handful of you are. Just knowing what I know about how much EA members care about supporting employees. So, my apologies for not starting there. And Christy, it looks like some
So,
suggestions.
just we have kind of a way that we go about
Okay.
this because things in our chat aren't recorded. So, and also I need to recognize speakers. It's not like you all just kind of do all this stuff. Really quick, as far as Mel's question about access to the slide deck, yes, Michelle is going to send this to us so we have it part of the meeting presentation. There were a couple of comments in there as well. One was, a call from the president to faculty and staff as an opportunity supporting our staff community during this difficult time. And then also, have we approached administration about a matching program? So I will leave that to either Michelle or Christy to respond to. And then, if anyone else has any questions or comments, please raise your hand so you can be recognized.
Thank you for the questions. And as Christy is the chair of the committee, I want her to weigh in if anything I say is incorrect here or she wants to supplement it. Overall, one of the things I just want to acknowledge is that even when human resources communicates about the program and encourages donations, when it's in times when people are feeling a lot of insecurity and stress about their jobs, and perhaps their perception of the university and leadership. There's just a lot right now, right? And so, we have certainly been given feedback from folks who say this doesn't land very well in this time when I feel like the university should be doing more, not employees. I don't think that that feedback alone is a reason to not promote the fund or to encourage people to be involved, however. It's just something that we try to be very respectful of or aware of the range of perspectives that folks kind of bring into this and bring into giving in today's environment right now. Christy?
Yes, I would say only to add that the fund is really about the staff community supporting the staff community. It's about us coming together and being a safety net for each other, despite what is going on, despite what the institution may do, despite it's really in addition to or in absence of that. We have there was another comment, and I just wanted to speak to it. Given the disparity of donation to need, there are times and have been in my experience three distinct times when the institution has contributed directly to the fund. And it's not a fanfare. We don't make a big deal about it, but it is the way in which the fund is able to respond to one example that I can think of is I think it was 2016, potentially. Michelle, you could correct me. There was a tremendous amount of flooding of the Susquehanna, and many in our community experienced flooding to the south of us, who lived to the south of us. And it well exceeded the ability of the fund to respond. The institution gave money, a significant contribution to the fund to be able to respond to that situation. So while we're not having a call, the call from the institution is more about United Way, they do step up, and it has been recognized and thanked.
Yes, Marcy.
Yep. Just to put it out there too, while we are going through such transition and such turmoil right now, this is a great way to tangibly help our own employees and faculty. Mostly, unfortunately, it is mostly employees that do request assistance, but this is a tangible way to help and to feel good too, either through your you. Do it through your employee, payroll deduction. You don't even see it, you don't miss it. It's never hit your paycheck anyway. So yeah, that's a great way to do it. It's also a great way to for the fund to stay sustainable. That's money that they can that the fund can count on each paycheck really. But one-time donations and also your points, any way that you can donate is great. And it's a great way to feel good about what you're doing too.
Thanks so much, Marcy. And I want to underscore that the vast majority of donations, if Chris, you didn't already say this, is like a dollar per paycheck, right? That's the vast majority. And that's great. We welcome that. We welcome that kind of participation. It's about participating. It's not about trying to get folks to give these massive amounts from their pay regularly. Having that kind of steady income coming in from a large group of people provides stability to a program that one-off campaigns for individual donations at one time don't necessarily. A couple other things I just want to mention is that the university does have some very strict regulations around cash and the handling of cash that have impacted a bit how we go about fundraising. The committee has been really great about integrating PayPal and Venmo and really trying to embrace kind of the technology side of things. And you'd be amazed at how difficult it is to get some stuff like that set up. I do want to acknowledge the Giving Day suggestion. So we have, in consultation with Alumni Affairs and Development, proposed that the CARE Fund be a part of Giving Day. The overall kind of the message that we have received is that the focus is primarily on student-related needs that donors can contribute to. So that's not to suggest that we don't revisit that. That was just kind of like, here's what our mission for Giving Day is, and it's within these kinds of parameters. And I don't know, perhaps that's related to so many other needs that exist on our campus community that supporting this would open it up to. But that is something that we have had in mind. And I do want to give the committee a shout out. They attend so many different tabling events, far more than past committees have. This particular group is hitting the pavement with their promotion. It is a tough time to get folks signing up to give when they feel uncertain.
Jeremy.
I just want to respond to the idea that Giving Day's focus is on students and academics, and question when the focus is on staff.
I think it's a very, very well-made point, Jeremy.
Yvonne?
Thank you so much, Michelle and Christy, for sharing this important information with us. My question is about the fund itself. Is this an endowed account, or is it specifically through the donations, and there's the potential for it drying out based on the need?
So it is not funded by any kind of reoccurring contribution that's made by a donor of any kind. It is a university account that, unless there's a specific contribution that the university makes in a crisis like the flooding, the only revenue that's coming in is from contributions from employees. We have not had to deny an application that meets our criteria the past few years as a result of not having enough funding. What Christy was really getting at is that the needs are greater than what our criteria currently allows for, right? And so, you know, we stay stable right now, and that's kind of our goal, fiscal stability, so that we can continue being responsive to those very high level needs. But if we were to want to evolve the mission of the program to be inclusive of things such as vehicle repairs, you know, pet bills, all those types of things, then we would need additional contributions coming in. And given that we're just barely sustainable meeting the needs of those who meet the criteria, that's a concern of mine. I also think there are many situations that if you heard the stories, you would want to give more than $2,000, right? So we're very slow about increasing the cap award. And again, please remember, this is post-tax. They don't get the full $2,000. Right. There are reasons why the way that this fund is managed, being an internal employer sponsored hardship fund, it doesn't qualify for IRS rules on being tax free monies, because they have some specific rules saying you can only do that for floods, or you can only do that for like these small of parameters, when we have expanded to be inclusive of more situations. So, Yvonne, I'm not sure if that actually answered your question, but feel free to follow up.
You know, it did. And I guess, like, I would love to connect with y'all a little bit more about, you know, like, strategizing and seeing if there's a potential for making this an endowed account that can bring consistent revenue to continue to fund it sustainably, and be able to expand that criteria that you talked about. I wonder if I can also ask, you know, you mentioned that it's a post-tax amount that it's awarded from the $2,000. Roughly, do you know how much that is?
It kind of depends on what tax brackets they're in, right? So that's hard to say. When I'm working with people, I generally suggest that they advise that they anticipate about a 30%, 25 to 30% reduction. I think most folks, it's not as severe as that, especially if they are, you know, claiming, what is it, zero exemptions or something like that. So it really does range on the individual circumstance, though. And if we wanted to gross up, that's also an option. But again, we would need to fundraise, have more income coming in to be able to do that for folks. So we'd love to talk with you about ideas.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy.
Just in addition to the post-tax, it's probably important to mention that the donations that you make are not tax deductible. I know this because I have been a long-term time donator to the fund, but it's important to know ahead of time. Additionally, I think you put up numbers for the number of people served and the total amount. And maybe my memory is off, but the total amount of people served times 2,000, wasn't that less than the total amount given?
Yes, remember, we just changed the level of max level of contribution within the past year, year and a half.
Oh, okay.
So,
Thank you.
and not everyone awarded a grant receives the full value. It's relative to what they indicate that they need.
That's a great point, Christy. We receive applications from folks asking for 500, let's say, and in that process, we can let them know that since it's post-tax, if they are in need of that full $500, maybe their request coming in could be adjusted, and it would still meet the criteria of the program, as long as they can demonstrate the need.
Do we have any other questions, comments, feedback for either Michelle or Christy?
I know Christy's team has been doing presentations by college and unit with the support of leadership in each college and unit. So, Christy, I don't know if you've made a full loop around campus yet or not, but if there's many others, that might be something as a way as an EA representative, you can help make connections there to bring something a little bit more local to folks rather than centralized campaigns.
We have not made it the full way around. We will be reaching out, and I will be connecting with EA employees as we do, reaching out to each of the colleges and units with a abbreviation version of this presentation. Also, wanted to put a plug in. The CARE Fund will have a volunteer committee at commencement, as we did last year. It's a partnership with sustainability. We gather all the recyclables and we make a donation into the fund based upon the waste we receive from the. If you're interested, it'll be up on the commencement website. Feel free to spend the morning or afternoon with us.
Jeremy again.
I just realized that my last comment came off a little negative, and it wasn't actually intended at all, because I absolutely support everyone donating to the CARE Fund. The reason why it is not tax deductible is because we're doing an awesome thing, which is expanding the scope of who we can award these to, including victims of domestic violence, which makes it ineligible for being claimed on your taxes, but it's because you're doing an awesome thing.
Thank you so much for that, Jeremy. Really appreciate you pointing that out. All right, well, don't hesitate to reach out to us with your ideas and suggestions, especially, 11 o'clock at night when you're trying to fall asleep and think, hey, I've got a brilliant idea. I feel you. And let me know, just not at 11 o'clock at night. Get in touch the next day. Thank you, everybody.
Great. Thanks again. And Michelle, if you could please send that slide deck to us so we could put it with our presentation, our meeting materials, that would be great.
You bet.
Appreciate both of you and all that you've done on behalf of the CARE Fund and staff.
Thanks, team. Bye.
All right. Our next item under business of the day is our spring 2026 Employee Assembly elections, the calendar and rules. So I'm going to switch it over to Stephanie Rizzou, who is the chair of our elections committee.
There we go. Oh, okay. Thank you. Everything's been slow today, so slow to mute and slow to come on camera here. But thank you, everyone. I'm the chair of the elections committee, and this afternoon I've brought the drafts of the election rules and the election calendar for the spring 2026 election process. I have in chat, I just sent the quick links so that everyone can quickly open them. They're all in the Box Employee Assembly folder. But for the election rules, so just really quickly summarizing what's happened, what didn't really happen with the rules. I was elections chair last year as well, and nothing has really changed. We did change a few spots where the wording we could have made more clear. So nothing in terms of the actual process. Oh, thank you, Rose. Yes, if you're not in the EA, you won't be have access to those. But nothing in terms of the exact process of the elections process has changed in the rules. It was just very general grammatical changes and edits like that too. And in terms of the calendar, So things did shift a little bit, just how holidays ended up for 2026. We wanted to make sure that we were avoiding them as much as possible. So in terms of the calendar, very quickly, we are hoping to start the campaigning on March 17th. So this is when the candidate info will go on the website, and then we'll have that mandatory candidate information session as well. And immediately after that info session, campaigning will begin. Everything will be opened. And apologies, I missed a very important part. On Monday, March 2nd, is when the registration materials will be provided online. So that registration period will last until Friday. Oh, another Friday, the 13th in March. So that will last through then. And then the candidate info will go on the website. Info session will happen. Campaigning will begin. Apologies for totally skipping over that first part there. So in terms of the campaigning, so that will end March 25th. And then from there, once that ends, voting will open. So on the 26th, it will open. Voting will continue and will close at noon on Monday, April 6th. This does overlap a bit with spring break, with Passover, but it doesn't fully encompass that entire holiday. So we're hoping that'll be okay, so that folks that need to take time off or want to take time off will still be, that voting will still be open for them once they return for there. And of course, the results will be announced by noon the following day, so April 7th, those results will be put together. Those are the main timeline of the process itself. There is a calendar in here that goes into May. Those were just finishing out how the holidays were listed, how they fall, last day of classes, study days, study periods, all of that, as well as the final EA meetings that are occurring and already scheduled too. So that's where it ends for May as well. As you're looking through things, if you have any questions about the rules or the calendar itself, I'm happy to answer those as well too. I know it's still a lot of information to skim through very quickly, but if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thanks, Stephanie. Also, just a point of clarification for those of you that are on the call that are not EA members and are potentially interested in running in the elections. As Stephanie said, the registration materials will be online on the Employee Assembly website March 2nd, and the voting, all the good stuff will be taking place end of March, beginning of April. Once the results are announced and we have our new EA members for that have been elected, our next meeting or our second meeting in April on the 15th is actually our organizational meeting, and those that are elected into our vacant, our open seats right now, please come to that meeting, because our organizational meeting, we actually go into executive session, and that's how we determine who will be on our executive committee for the 26-27 session, our chairs for our standing committees, etc. So it's good to have our new members that are recently elected in those meetings or in that meeting. But yeah, if we have any other questions or comments or anything for Stephanie regarding spring elections? All right. Seeing none, I am going to go to the next item under business of the day. We had a call, or our last meeting, the co-chairs of the Future of the American University Committee met with us, and we actually had a very robust discussion with them. They offered to have us put together an EA advisory group. So an email has gone out to all of you as EA members. If any of you as an EA member or any of your committee members are interested in serving on this advisory group, please get back to me by the end of this week, so by Friday the 20th. I did reach out to Adam Smith, who's one of the co-chairs and also the Associate Dean of Faculty, regarding time commitment for this. His response was they would hope to have a discussion with the group in the coming couple of weeks to listen to concerns. That would be about an hour or so, and then we would want to come back to the group in April to workshop ideas. Also imagine occasional questions perhaps arising between meetings to address by email. Overall, would not anticipate a time commitment beyond 2 to 3 hours. So that's where that stands. Also, if you'll see in the faculty staff news today, there was upcoming events for the future of the American University. I would urge all of you, if you have time or if this is just a topic that is of interest to you, to please attend those meetings or events that are going on, that sort of thing. Any questions about that advisory group? I know I've already gotten some names of people of who are interested in serving on the advisory group, so I'm going to be forwarding them to Phoebe Sengers, who's also one of the co-chairs and will be our point of contact for that advisory group. But as I said, any questions, you can email me. I'm actually going to put my, you can email me at my EA chair email. It's the best way to get in touch with me. Next item under business of the day is that late addition. We now have an incidental vacancy in our BIPOC seat as our colleague Ricky Boche has stepped down. If any of you are aware of anyone who might be interested in this, this opens our 2-week solicitation period for any individuals that may be interested in filling this incidental vacancy. They would have to submit a statement of interest to Danielle as Vice Chair of Operations and Finance, and after 2 weeks, if she has interest, she will send out a slate of candidates. They'll give their statement, we can ask questions, then we go into executive committee or session to vote. If we don't have anyone, I am comfortable, and again, I look to all of you for any feedback or input. I would be comfortable with putting this vacancy on the slate of open seats for the spring election. Ricky, that seat's term is actually spring of 2027. So we would have the election and the individual, if there was a individual that was interested in running for that seat and they were successful, they would fill it just for next year's term. And then if they wanted to continue on, they would have to rerun for the election. Jeremy and then Carl.
Can we encourage anyone with access or who is on the appropriate CNGs to offer that? Advertise that opening, and if not, then somebody in the administrative office that can more generally post.
Yes, and actually Aaron Sumberchase in chat just basically said the very same thing that you did. So I will, I'm not 100% sure who is on that particular colleague network group, but I will try and find out and see that they can post that information out to their group. Carl.
Yeah, just a processes question. I may have messaged Rose separately on this, but can we do incidentals in the same semester that we're holding elections prior to the election? I thought we could do incidentals after the election if no one was nominated, but I couldn't remember whether we could do incidentals prior to the elections because we would just publish it with the elections. Sorry.
No, we can do incidental prior to the election. That's fine. Should someone fill the incidental vacancy, they would fill it for the remainder of this current term, so through May 31st, 2026, and then they would still fill the rest of the term of it for the next coming year. So they would actually have like 15 or so months. And then spring of next year, when that seat's term comes up for election, they would have to rerun.
I guess
Yes.
my question is more in equity and access for the seat, mostly because the people who are in the CNGs might have priority over getting the information over someone who's not in a CNG, even though a person who may not be in the CNG might be just as qualified, or more in, active in the community. So I guess unless we're letting the community as a whole know, then we're giving priority. Access to people who are in the CNG. That's the only question I have about this, and I don't have any feelings about giving people who are in the CNG priority because they are represented in the community, but it may be something that comes up about equity of access.
Okay, so I am actually looking right at our governing documents, and as far as incidental vacancies, it says in the event a seat remains open because an eligible staff candidate did not run for election, that seat is first filled from any eligible candidates not seated from other elections. Should an incidental vacancy occur for any seat, the assembly seats the highest ranked unseated candidate from the most recent election for that seat. Should an incidental vacancy occur and no eligible candidates remain to be seated from the most recent election for that seat, the assembly may seat a member to fill the vacancy by the following process: solicit interest from the employee community within 2 weeks of the vacancy's occurrence. At the next meeting after solicitation has been closed, a slate of eligible candidates must be presented to the assembly, and then all of the other things that I said. What this does is, it's my understanding, and I will look to Rose as parliamentarian and also to Jessica as Office of the Assemblies. I believe because I actually went back to when Ricky was elected, there were no other candidates. So those first 2 points of there was no one else that ran, and we don't have an unseated,
Point
highest
of
ranked unseated candidate.
clarification. Point of clarification. My inquiry was not on the ability to do this, but it was the note that we have to notify our community, our constituents at large, rather than just individually, because we have to make the seat known to the full population rather than just part of the population, as written in our bylaws. Sorry.
So the way that I read this, though, is solicit interest from the employee community by sending this
Yes.
out to the CNG, and our meetings are
It doesn't
public.
specify, and we can't only ask
No,
for part of the community.
please let me finish, Carl. It says solicits interest from the employee community. It doesn't say anything specifically of how we do that. My view of that, or my perspective, and again, I'm happy to have someone say, Wendy, you're completely wrong on this. My view on that is by way of sending this information to the CNGs, and our meetings are public record, and our minutes are available, and the recordings are available. That's our notification of solicitation for interest in this seat. I will go to, and I mean, unless Rose or Jessica needs to clarify something more or say, hey, Wendy, that's not correct. We can go to Jeremy, Rose, and Jessica.
Okay, just to kind of clarify the way I see things, and I think it's landing somewhere between the things that were already said, which is that being a member of the VCNG, I have an opportunity to communicate with people from a diverse spectrum across the university that share that identity. It's not generally just those people that you're speaking to, though. They have access to additional distribution groups. It's a network to send out from. I also believe that we are communicating to our employee assembly right now. Each of you is a representative for a particular group and should be communicating this opening to your constituencies, however you can. In addition to that, I don't see any problem with adding this to the next EAA voice that goes out, which is an additional avenue of communication.
Thanks, Jeremy. Rose?
No, thank you. I think the spirit is all good between all of us. I think one way to solve this is if we ask the Office of Assemblies, we can prepare something for them to send out. And then once that's out, it can then be forwarded to the CNGs. So something can first go to the constituent base that we already send things like the EA Voice out to. And then the CNGs could wait until that goes out and then just forward that to their individual groups. And it sort of solves both problems. That is my suggestion.
Thanks, Rose. Jessica?
Yep, everybody has perfect advice here. I just want to reiterate that these are public meetings, and so stating that you are looking to fill a vacancy is meeting what is required by the rules. The spirit, the spirit of the rules. But you can also put this out in many other ways. You have the EA voice. Victoria's not here, but I think Victoria's planning a newsletter soon, and that does go out to your entire constituency. You have LinkedIn and Facebook. They're all just extras. The more you do, the wider your reach, and the more often you're catching people's attention. So starting with stating the call at your public meeting is anything else is extra and better.
Great. Thanks for that, Jessica. I appreciate it. Also, I will reach out to the CNG, the BIPOC CNG board, and ask them. I realize that Aaron said I can forward it, but I'll do the legwork on that. We'll be all set. I appreciate the offer, though. Do we have any other comments, questions, feedback on our incidental vacancy that we have? All right. If not, we will move into committee reports. Before we do so, I apologize. We also have another late addition to the agenda. It is our, Carl, help me out here, Cornell Employee Assembly Priority Poll Ad Hoc Committee.
CEAPP, it's the Committee for Employee Assembly Priority Poll.
There we
CEAPP.
go. Apologies, that should have been added to the agenda. So I would like to add that. To the end of our committee reports, I would welcome a motion to add that with, by unanimous consent.
Seconded, or a motion to add it by unanimous consent.
Seconded.
Do we have a second? Do we have any dissent? Seeing none, Carl, you will be giving your presentation after the elections committee. And so we will start off with executive committee, Yvonne.
Yes, can everyone hear me? Yes, awesome. Cool. So during our executive committee, a few things that we're doing is we're reviewing some updates to the bylaws. Those should be presented to y'all in the next couple of employee assembly meetings. And we'll have the opportunity to review resolutions and all that kind of stuff to make some updates. We had the opportunity, Wendy and I, to meet with VP CHRO Sean Moeller yesterday. We had I think, a productive conversation. We had the opportunity to connect with one another, learn about how we can collaborate and the communication between us as the EA representatives and our liaison, who is Sean, the VP CHRO. Some of the topics that came up is were reclassification, and internal job postings. As we continue to receive more information, we'll make sure to share here as well. And the last thing that I want to share with y'all is the coworker coffee that is happening on March 11th. As we have been sharing with y'all, it is important for us to have a presence in the community and for our constituents to see us being there and supporting, connecting with them, and figuring out what is it that we can do to continue to support them. So in that effort, I am asking at least three representatives to sign up and show up and be there. Some of the members of the executive committee have committed to being there as well. Their names are not going to be listed there, but I just put a spreadsheet on the, or a link to a spreadsheet on the chat. Again, if at least three individuals, three employee assembly representatives can put their names and commit to attending, we would greatly appreciate it. And that is what I have.
Great. Thanks, Yvonne. Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee. Unfortunately, Victoria had some things that she had to attend to and is unable to join us today, so I actually have her committee report. The Communications Committee scheduled their remaining meetings for the spring semester on the third Thursday of every month. The February EA voice was sent out last week, giving constituents a full month notice to attend our coworker coffee on March 11th at 11 a.m. And again, following up with what Yvonne just said, we would love to see as many people there, both EA members and non-EA members, or just in general, in person. That would be great. We've also ordered EA pens and pins to give out to members in the upcoming weeks. She says, we're very excited for this multiple generational chair project being completed. So the pens are already in the Office of the Assemblies. I'm not sure about the pins, but if you happen to be in the vicinity of Day Hall and you want to see Jessica and Eric's smiling faces and grab some pens, please, by all means, do so. And then her last item is the next meeting for Communications Committee is on Thursday, January 26th at 2 p.m., where they will begin preparation for the coffee hour and an April EA voice. That is it from communications. Next, we have Employee Education Development Committee, Deb.
Hello, everyone. Nothing new from our last report. We are meeting next week, I think. The 27th we're meeting. So we'll continue to talk about our projects that we want to move forward with. And that is all.
Great. Thanks, Deb. Employee Welfare Committee, Marcy.
Hello, yes, we met last week. We discussed the future of American University in their previous visit to us. It was shared that they would be reaching out for representatives. That's great. Discussed the March 4th meeting with President Kotlikoff and any topics that people wanted to discuss. What else? We discussed, how everyone was feeling, and any ways that we can help promote any type of staff feeling to feel more supported, to feel more, to just feel a little better about, you know, life. And was just wondering if the communications department, you know, communications committee might want to share any resources in the next newsletter. If that's something that could be done, also reaching out to your local well-being people in your own colleges, and I believe that was it. We'll next meet in March, due to some scheduling and our performance dialogue updates, and you know we're having some meetings with that. So that's it from us.
Great. Thanks, Marcy. Benefits and Policy Committee, Ellie.
Hi, everyone. In our last meeting, we discussed a little bit about a benefits-related question. We, again, talked about parking and then some of the issues with the snow removal around parking and being in handicapped spaces. And we chatted a little bit about an amenity when it comes to surveys and what other ways we could maybe get feedback from the community, maybe suggestion boxes or other such things. And we are looking to meet again next month.
Awesome. Thanks, Ellie. Elections Committee. Stephanie, do you have anything else to add outside of spring 26 election stuff?
I do not. Thank you.
Thanks. And Carl with the Cornell Employee Assembly Priorities Poll Ad Hoc Committee.
Yeah, so we've done a lot of work. We met earlier this month. We finalized a mission statement, which I sent to the executive committee to review. I think there was a lot of questions about what we're trying to get out of the priority poll and what we're doing with the information. In creating that mission statement, we discussed a potential additional task for the committee, which is following up on the prior year's actions. So what we're trying to do is report at the end of the year what the targeted and most prevalent issues were. And then in the following year, if we could follow up in the report saying what actions we took, if there were actions or if there were blockades to that action, if we ran into a place where we weren't getting the information, we should be open and clear with our constituents about that. And while that hasn't been approved yet, that is the intent is to keep that line of communication open so that people feel like the contributions they're giving are being prioritized and actually worked on. We refined and solidified questions. The draft of the first draft of the survey is probably going to the CEAP team soon, this Friday, most likely. And then we'll have HR review after the team approval. Communication is being worked on. Victoria worked on a one pager. There will be communication with the CNG leadership and possibly the staff newsletter, although I have to solidify that. And they will help disseminate the info, along with Victoria saying that we can do an off-cycle email to the constituents that we serve as a whole. So that's all for us.
Awesome. Thanks, Carl. Any questions for any of our committee chairs before we move into liaison reports? And I also want to be mindful we have 9 minutes left in our meeting. If not, we'll move into liaison reports. Ricky was actually our EA representative to the EA Campus Codes Committee, so I am actually just going to say that we don't have any update there. Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment. I believe that's you, Ellie. Do you have any updates for us?
Sorry, I was muted. Yeah, they actually did meet last week or the week before, but I was unavailable to meet, unfortunately. And it looks like they've scheduled some upcoming meetings, so hopefully I'll have an update soon.
Great, thank you. University Assembly Campus Welfare Committee. I think that's Danielle and Gladys. I apologize, I'm not looking at my list of who our UA reps are to the UA committees.
I don't think we've met since the last meeting.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Marcy. Campus Planning Committee. Mel or Kate?
We have not met at this time.
Great, thank you. Yvonne, any updates from our Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board?
No updates at the moment.
All right, Jeremy already had to step off, and I don't believe there's any updates for Committee for Campus Constituency Elected Trustees, so I go then to Danielle with any updates or info for Faculty Senate.
At a meeting last week, they were trying to pass a resolution to strengthen shared governance and academic freedom, discussing ambiguous language and creating an ad hoc committee. The Student Code of Conduct Review came and gave them the same presentation that they gave us last time and or in the special meeting. And someone from the library came and discussed that some of the academic journals will be discontinued because of rising subscription costs.
Great. That closes our liaison reports. I will move us into open discussion. Again, with a reminder, we have 7 minutes left, so if we need something longer, we'll need a motion to extend the meeting. Anything for open discussion, please raise your hand. Seeing no items for open discussion, I would be more than happy to welcome a motion to adjourn by unanimous consent.
Motion to adjourn by unanimous consent.
Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Do I have any dissent? Seeing none, I adjourn this meeting of February 18th at the of the Employee Assembly, and I give you all 6 minutes back of your day. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Thanks.